So over the past few weeks, we've gone through a series called Brick by Brick. And it's been an amazing walk through some of the minor prophets to talk about how God used these prophets and these people to work together deliberately with the Israelites to rebuild the wall, to rebuild the temple, and to rebuild Jerusalem. And throughout the series, we talked about how there were amazing victories, and then there were challenges. There were people who were excited about what God was doing through his people, and there were people who were trying to thwart everything that God was doing. And through it, we recognized that what seemed to be impossible was possible because they took it one step at a time. They allowed things to happen brick by brick. And so last week, as we closed out the series Brick by Brick, last week was also what we call Generosity Sunday, where we concentrated our efforts and it was the culmination of those efforts to see God do something amazing through our generosity and to collect for our vision fund. And so here at the church, we've been talking all year about this vision fund, and the vision truly is to create churches that mobilize the next generation. And so our goal at the beginning of the year, we said we're going to push to collect $50,000 by the end of this year, to have $50,000 specifically in reserves to go towards the vision fund. And so last week, I'm excited to announce that we reached the point of almost $48,000. And so as you see, this graphic here, pretty simple graphic, but $48,000 is about 95% of the goal. But the great thing about it is that we're only halfway through the year. And so what it showed me was that each and every one of us had to take ownership and really recognize that what it took for us to see this, what seemed to be impossible goal, come to life, it took unreasonable faith. Say it out loud. Say unreasonable faith. Now, when Keegan said it earlier, y'all looked at him like, what that mean? And so I'm going to explain it to you. Unreasonable faith is faith, like faith is believing something you cannot see, right? Unreasonable faith is it's so outlandish that it's not prompted by any good sense. It's not prompted by any precise calculations. It is absolutely unreasonable. And so that's the title of today's message, is Unreasonable Faith. Let's open up our Bibles to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. And that's where we'll start. Now, I want to encourage you all to talk back, because I don't believe in just talking to y'all. I want to encourage you to take notes and follow along in the scriptures. Hebrews chapter 11, starting in verse 17. If you're there, say there. Thank you. All right, if you still need some time, say hold up. All right, 5, 4. All right. I'm going to have it up on the screen as well. It's the Amplified version up on the screen, but it says, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, that is, as the testing of his faith was still in progress, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises of God was ready to sacrifice his only son of promise, to whom it was said, through Isaac your descendants shall be called. For he considered it reasonable to believe that God was able to raise Isaac even from among the dead. Indeed, in the sense that he was prepared to sacrifice Isaac, in obedience to God, Abraham did receive him back from the dead, figuratively speaking. Now, in order for us to dig into this particular passage, it's important for us to understand a few things. One, this is towards the end of what many categorize as the Hall of Faith in Hebrews 11. And this chapter is full of what some may call some heavy hitters in the Old Testament. It was some amazing men and women who God used to do amazing things and moved in powerful ways. But when you read the list and you look a little closely, it is full of frail, faulty, flawed, messed up individuals. You got Noah, who was a drunk. Jacob was a swindler. Rahab was a prostitute. David was a murderer and adulterer. Samson was lustful and arrogant. And Abraham was a fearful liar. didn't stop their names from being put in this amazing list of people. Why? Because of their unreasonable faith. See, God's not as concerned about your past as your neighbor is. Sometimes we can look at somebody and be like, oh, I don't know how they could do something like that, because that guy's a liar. He's a cheater. He's a swindler. He'll never be able to amount to anything. But God isn't concerned about that. A lot of times, he's more concerned about your faith and the way that you obey him than anything else. And so what is faith exactly? Let's break it down just a little bit, just in case we don't know. The definition in Hebrews 11:1 is assurance of what we hope for and confidence in what we don't see. According to Martin Luther King Jr., faith is taking the first step without seeing the entire staircase. Now, if you really still can't understand what faith is, who drove here this morning? Now, you don't have to put yourself out there, so you ain't got to raise your hand, but how many people wondered if their car was going to start this morning? You got to raise your hand. It's okay. But really, faith is you get in your car just about every morning, and you put the key in the ignition, or if you're a little fancy, you sit in the car, you press the button, and you just know that joint going, right? Or who came in and checked the structural integrity of the chairs before they sat down? Nobody does it. You just came in and sat in the seat. You had faith that the chair was actually going to work. You had faith that you could just use your legs to walk on in here. Sometimes we can take that for granted. But really, on the smallest level, that's what faith is. But in the same way, Abraham had to have faith to take God at his word. Now, if you're not familiar with Abraham, you can see his story in Genesis chapters 11 through 25, and you will see exactly how it went. But we don't have time to go through all of it, and so I'm going to give you a quick synopsis. When he was 75 years old, he was told, leave Haran, leave your father, take your wife and your nephew, and go. Many of us, if God say go, you got 51 questions. Where? How? Why? What time? What about now? How about if I wait? But Abraham just said, okay. And along the way, God blessed him. He became more and more wealthy as he moved along, and he followed God's plan. He trusted God to lead him wherever he needed to go. And so eventually, God makes a promise to him. He says, from you, I will make you the father of many nations. Now, Abraham was a little up in age. At 75, you're not quite thinking about starting all over. You're not quite thinking about having a baby at 75. So when God made that promise, Abraham and his wife Sarah were like, I don't know about that. How is this going to work? But over time, they're moving, and they encounter some kings. The kings think Sarah fine, apparently. That's just what the Bible say. And so they try to take Sarah, and he gets scared, and he's like, nah, that's my sister. And he's like, nah, that's not your sister. That's your wife. I mean, technically. And so then he says, well, technically, you know, she is my half-sister, so it's not a lie. It's a lie. So then they try to fast forward and move, manipulate God's plan. So then he gets Hagar, Sarah's maidservant, pregnant, and that caused a whole issue, a whole mess. And so along the way, you see Abraham is much like us. God makes a promise. We say, you know what, God, I'm going to help you out because you need my help, right? You consult me. You ask me for advice. So then they move on. 25 years later, they have Isaac, and God's promise is fulfilled. Story over. Time out. Game over, right? The end. Happily ever after, right? Nope. Nope, that's not how it goes at all. God later puts Abraham to the test after he finally has this son, Isaac, his only son from Sarah. And so in Genesis 22, Abraham sets off for a 50-mile journey with Isaac, with some servants. And I imagine as you go on a 50-mile journey, if Isaac was anything like my son, he might have had a few questions. Because I know if my son was with me and we're just going to do a little sacrifice, my son would be like, so, Daddy, where's the goat? So, but Daddy, usually there's a cow involved, right? I'm not sure how this works. And I would just be walking along with my backpack like, yeah, son, the Lord will provide. The Lord will provide. But none of it made sense. None of what Abraham was asked to do actually made sense. But Abraham had to be vigilant. He had to wait 25 years. Some of us can't pray for something for 25 minutes. Many times we don't want to wait for something for 25 days. 25 hours, 25 months. Really, 25 seconds for many of us. I'm going to be honest with you. After 25 minutes, I'm probably not praying about the same thing. I'm not focused enough to keep praying about the same thing. And so when Abraham was tested, he had to recognize, like, man, I got to be vigilant in the promise. There's some things God has promised us. There's things he's placed on our hearts, passions he's placed in our hearts, purpose he's aligned us with. And because it hasn't come true yet, we waver, and we wonder if God is really going to come through. But what I realize is that one of the biggest things about having unreasonable faith is that unreasonable faith is rooted in God's promises. It's rooted in God's promises. You ever notice how some of our greatest challenges in our faith come from attributing flawed human characteristics to God? Like, have you ever called God petty? Like, have you ever got mad at God and like, God, why are you doing this to me? You're being petty. If you really think about it and you dissect your disappointment with God sometimes, it's really because we've been disappointed by people, been betrayed by people, been overlooked by people, been beat up by people. And as soon as God says, have faith, we say, God, nah, you're going to betray me. You're going to leave me out there. You're going to forget about me. But can I point you to a promise of God? Numbers 23, verse 19. Numbers 23, 19, it says, God is not a man, so he does not lie. He's not human, so he does not change his mind. He's spoken. Has he spoken and failed to act? And has he promised and not carried it through? Think about this. What if there was a room in heaven that was full of all the things that were about to be delivered to you, but you just stopped praying that one extra day? What if it was that idea you were praying about and it could have changed the landscape of the world, but you lost faith too soon? What about if it was that thing that you were praying about, that cure that would help your sibling or your parents or your children, that you were praying about, and right before God was about to make it happen for you, you gave up? See, when Abraham was tested, all he had was God's promises. All he had was what God had said he would do. God said he would make him a great nation. God said he would supply his needs. God said, follow me. That's all he got. But yet, he could trust it because God was the only, like, there was no one for God to swear by that was higher than himself. And so let's look at Romans chapter 4, because I love what it says here in Romans 4, verse 18 through 22. I'm going to go ahead and read it, and it's up here. Against all hope, Abraham in hope believed and so became the father of many nations, just as it had been said to him, so shall your offspring be. Without weakening in his faith, he faced the fact that his body was as good as dead, he was old as dirt, since he was about 100 years old, and that Sarah's womb was also dead because she was old as dirt, yet he did not waver through unbelief regarding the promise of God, but was strengthened in his faith and gave glory to God, being fully persuaded that God had the power to do what he had promised. This is why it was credited to him, Abraham, as righteousness. Without weakening or wavering. That's a high calling. To actually pursue something in faith that God has promised you and not weaken, not waver, but to actually be strengthened in your faith while you're waiting. He says, against all hope. Like, it did not make sense. It was unreasonable for Abraham's promise to actually come true. It was unreasonable. Like, from a physical standpoint, most people do not have babies in such old age. Just in general. It's not going to happen. It's too many complications. It's really, I'm not a medical student, but I'm just saying, I think I know that it's not likely to happen. But in verse 22, being fully persuaded that God had the power to do what he had promised, Abraham made a decision to take his son to be sacrificed. That's the hard thing to do. Like, think about the things that God has given you, and then he says, give it back. It's not the easiest thing to do a lot of times. God, I prayed for this car. Now, whoa. You want me to use it for you? I prayed for this job, but you want me to be a light? I prayed for this spouse, but she's getting on my nerves. Once he fulfilled his promise, did you do your part? When he gave you exactly what you prayed for, how did you respond? See, in order for our promises to be rooted, for our hope to be rooted in the promises of God and our faith to be rooted in the promise of God, we actually have to hear from God. Not this abstract voice that we say is God, but it's really our subconscious want us to do what we want to do, and so we say it was from God. Y'all know y'all do that. We're like, yeah, God told me. No, he didn't. You were just talking to yourself. But there are some things that are objectively in God's word that are promises to all who believe. It says, God will supply all your needs according to his riches and glory. That's Philippians 4:19. God is not a man that he should lie. Numbers 23:19. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, for having stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that the Lord promised. James 1:12. Jesus came to give life and life to the full. John 10:10. I could go on and on and on. But when we talk about God making promises to us, this is where we have to find those promises. But what I'm saying is this. In order for Abraham to faithfully move forward to who God destined him to be, he had to trust that God made no mistakes, that God did not lie. And really, I think about some of the people in this room. I think about how Ashley had to trust God when she made a decision to move to Atlanta. She could have played it safe, moved back home to St. Louis, but she had to say, God, where do you want me to be in order for me to grow spiritually? Well, I think about Buster, or Jamal as y'all know him. Buster had opportunities to play basketball elsewhere, but he had to say, God, I want to know what you want me to do, because basketball is what I want to do. I want to go hoop. I want to be the man, you know what I'm saying? But then I also think about a few years ago when I quit my job. I quit to go full-time in ministry. I had to trust that God was like, I got you. I'm going to supply your needs. And then when I had to come out of full-time ministry, I was like, oh, where money going to come from, though? We ain't getting paid, so what's going to happen? And I didn't know that I would end up working at Coretta Scott King Academy. I didn't know that I would be able to help young women specifically. And what's great about it, I know they don't want the attention, but two of my players are right here. But all of that was about walking in faith. But also, unreasonable faith requires sacrifice. Because all of these stories require giving up something of importance. Abraham had to give up Isaac, but we all have something. We all have something that we have to give up. And really, I want to bring out these guys right here. Who's seen the movie Avengers Infinity War? All right, who plans on seeing Avengers Infinity War? Okay, if you haven't seen it and you plan on seeing it, you might want to see it before Ray preaches, but I'm about to give a synopsis anyway. So, it's my man RJ. Yay! And it's amazing to see how God works, because last year, around May and April, two of RJ's best friends got baptized. One of them was Buster. And the way God worked was, one of those guys went to Morehouse, and like, he was talking to RJ about the path. And then Buster went to North Clayton, where we met him, and he was talking to RJ about the path. And they were like, man, y'all need to go to this church called The Path. They didn't even know how God was working on RJ. So he started studying the Bible, and over the last year, we've been studying off and on. And the reason I brought up Avengers is because through all the things he was battling in his faith and trust in God, Avengers was what made it click for him. Because if y'all want to see it, just plug your ears real quick, because I'm about to say something. The main character, Thanos, was trying to collect these stones. But in order to get one of the stones, he had to sacrifice something he loved. And so in sacrificing his child, he received what he wanted. And, you know, it was a little dark. But really, when you think about it, it's the same thing Abraham had to do with Isaac. He had to make a decision to sacrifice because he wanted obedience to God more. But really, if you bring it even closer to home, God loved his son Jesus. But he wanted to give up Jesus just so that he could get something that he wanted more. And so RJ made that connection, and that's when he decided, I really want to give up everything to follow Jesus. So today, RJ is about to get baptized. So I wanted Buster to share something, because this is like his childhood brother, best friend. But go ahead, Buster.
Hey, Pat family, how y'all doing? Good, good. I just want to share how excited and just really how proud I am of my brother, man, my good bro, for just transforming his life, really, and just making this decision. So I'm extremely happy for him.
Sorry, I had to draw. My bad. So back to it. But really, that's such an amazing example of God working and just moving, you know, just having the faith, because us having faith that God's promise would be fulfilled, just because, you know, I ain't going to put them out there, but me and RJ had a lot of things in common. And sometimes it can put your faith to the test when you wonder, man, I've been sharing this with somebody, I've been studying with somebody, I've been really investing in this person, and they just don't seem to be getting it. And then he watches a movie. I'm gonna just start watching movies for the studies. But sometimes the reason our faith doesn't get stretched is because we don't really have any real skin in the game. Like, we don't really invest enough for it to hurt if it doesn't quite work out. Like, think about it. We got some smart people in this room. And sometimes we only go where our intellect will take us. We'll only go where our skills will take us. We'll only go where our reasoning will take us. And we won't truly expect and experience the amazing. Because if we can only go where we can see, then that's not quite unreasonable faith, right? Like, Keegan talked about Peter walking on water earlier, and it's like, that was pretty unreasonable. There is nothing in the laws of physics that says you should be able to physically stand on water. It's unstable. It's not a solid. But sacrifice has to become a habit. For Abraham, sacrifice was a habit. It was something that he was consistently doing. He sacrificed his comfort. He sacrificed his way. He sacrificed his own knowledge and understanding. And so when it came time for him to sacrifice his son, it was a no-brainer. If I'm being honest, sometimes it's hard to sacrifice. You know, I told y'all we like family, so I'll be honest with y'all. Sometimes it's hard for me to say, God, I'm going to step back out there and do this again. Sometimes it's hard to say, God, I mean, you want how much? I don't know about that one. You want what number? But then I see so many other examples of people sacrificing, and it prompts me to do the same. But then I remember, it's like, no, it's okay to sacrifice because I've done it before and I've seen God come through. You know, after hearing the news earlier about the Vision Fund, it could prompt some people to be like, oh, y'all got it. Y'all don't need my sacrifice. Y'all don't need my help. Y'all don't need nothing. Y'all got 95%. We good. But really, I don't think that's the heart that we have. I've seen so many people go above and beyond. I've seen the singles come together to have a fundraiser so they can, as a group, contribute something to the Vision Fund. Because when you think about it, creating churches and mobilizing the next generation, it takes a lot. I love, you know, being y'all's music minister. But I would love to be able to train somebody else so I can just preach. I love working with social media, but I would love to be able to continue to give that to somebody else. But the great thing about it is that's just us working together to sacrifice and to do what God calls us to do. But finally, unreasonable faith rejects convention. Unreasonable faith rejects convention. The kind of faith that we have is kind of like skydiving. So let's see what Will Smith had to say about his experience.
Skydiving is a really interesting confront with fear. I gotta stand up. You go out the night before and you know, you take a drink with your friends and somebody says, yeah, we should go skydiving tomorrow. And you go, yeah, we'll go skydiving tomorrow. Yeah. And you go, yeah. And everybody goes, yeah. And you go home by yourself, you're like, Right? You're like, well, I mean, they was drunk too. So then that night you're laying in your bed and you just keep and you're terrified. You keep imagining over and over again jumping out of an airplane and you can't figure out why you would do that. So you get there and then you have this safety brief and you're standing there and the guys will tell you, well, if the chute doesn't open, what's going to happen is you're doing, what could happen? So you get onto the airplane, and you're sitting there, and you know, it's extra because you're sitting on some dude's lap, some stranger, trying to make small talk. Yeah, man. You'd be jumping with people all the time, huh? So you fly, and you go up to 14,000 feet, and somebody opens the door. And in that moment, you realize you've never been in a freaking airplane with the door open. Terror. And then people start going out of the airplane. And the guy walks you up to the end of the thing, and you're standing, and your toes are on the edge, and you're looking out down to death. They say, on three. And he pushes you on two because people grab on three. And you fall out of the airplane. And in 1 second, you realize that it's the most blissful experience of your life. You're flying. There's zero fear. You realize at the point of maximum danger is the point of minimum fear. The lesson for me was, why were you scared in your bed the night before? What do you need that fear for? everything up to the stepping out, there's actually no reason to be scared. And then in that moment, all of a sudden, where you should be terrified is the most blissful experience of your life. And God placed the best things in life on the other side of fear.
God placed the best things in life on the other side of fear. Unreasonable faith rejects convention. Convention says, don't jump out of a perfectly good airplane. Convention says, don't put yourself out there on anything that requires faith. But in Hebrews 11, verse 19, it says, for he, Abraham, considered it reasonable to believe that God was able to raise Isaac even from among the dead. Indeed, in the sense that he was prepared to sacrifice Isaac in obedience to God, Abraham did receive him back from the dead, figuratively speaking. Is your faith so outlandish that you think God is going to do something that's really, really, really impossible and give him room to underwhelm you? Or is your faith just enough to say, God, you're asking for too much, but I'll step out just a little bit. Abraham reasoned that since God had promised him that he would be the father of many nations through Isaac, he said, well, if I kill Isaac, then I'll just get him back as a resurrected son. Great. God is going to come through. Y'all realize how ridiculous that reasoning is? Like, do you realize how much it doesn't make sense? But in all accounts that I see with God commending faith and Jesus being astounded is when people's faith is so outlandish that it only gives room for God to do the miraculous. And so for all of us, it is an opportunity constantly for us to see, how can my faith grow? How can I put myself in position to see God do more than I could imagine, more than I could think of, more than anyone ever could tell me could happen? Because if you want me to jump out of a good plane, I'm going to need to know that there's a parachute. Like, if I go skydiving and say, well, it's a possibility that your chute won't work. You could just leave me on the ground. But reason can only be stretched so far. Calculations can only work so much. But faith has no limits. There's a book one of my favorite books I've ever read called The Traveler's Gift by Andy Andrews. And in the book, this guy is moved throughout different points in history and interacting with different figures to learn one of seven habits or seven decisions for success. And so in this one particular chapter, he meets Gabriel, the archangel. And Gabriel says, you're here because this is where some of the greatest people have had to come through to recognize what God wanted them to be. And so earlier I talked about, what if there was a room in heaven? That wasn't the original idea. Got that from Andy, so just so y'all know. But in The Traveler's Gift, he's in this room. And he sees some photographs over to the side. And so he picks up a photograph. And the kids look very familiar to him, but he's never seen them before. And so he asks Gabriel, what are these kids' names? Gabriel said, that's Jason and Julia. He was like, oh, well, me and my wife wanted to have a boy and name him Jason, and a girl and name her Julia. And Gabriel said, I know. They were about to be deliberate, but you were too scared to do it. So then he goes through the room and he sees a pedestal. And on the pedestal, there's so many papers. They're stacked up on the pedestal. And so he looks through and he sees the cure to cancer, the cure to paralysis. He sees an idea for something that would shrink a child's tonsils. And when he sees this, he realizes, man, I could use this. My daughter needs her tonsils removed, and I can't afford it. And Gabriel was like, well, whoever thought about it, they didn't stay faithful enough to see it through. And so it made me think about how many times we, as we walk around and we have these ideas about the books we could write, the ways we could inspire, the people who need to taste our cooking, the people who need to hear our story. But out of fear and a lack of faith, we say, I'm not going to do that. I can't put that out there. What if I fail? What if it doesn't happen? But my favorite quote from that chapter, it says, reason can only be stretched so far, but faith has no limits. The only limit to your realization of tomorrow is the doubt you hold fast today. Thinking about Abraham, it didn't even cross Abraham's mind that God would say stop and provide a ram in the bush. His faith was so unreasonable that he thought the impossible was possible. And so here we are with an opportunity to have a relationship with God because of this one man's faith. Because if you think about it, if Abraham didn't follow through in obedience and become credited righteousness before the circumcision, then God's promise wouldn't have been able to come through every individual throughout the rest of the Bible. And so my question to you is, what will generations come to say about your faith? How will people be inspired by what you do? At what point will your faith be unreasonable? And in what ways will you take the limits off of God? So as we prepare for communion, I want us to really think about and pray about how God has worked and how he wants to work. And to finish this statement, by faith, the path will, ... But before you can even get to by faith, the path will, you have to say, by faith, I will, and finish that statement. Let's go to God in prayer. Heavenly Father God, we thank you for who you are. We thank you for being a God that does not prompt us to follow him without showing us exactly who you are and in your character. God, you show us time and time again that you are not flawed and fallible like we are. You show us time and time again that you're not man that you should lie, not the son of man that you should change your mind. God, I thank you for showing us these stories throughout the scriptures to prompt us to move in ways that seem impossible and to act on things that don't make sense sometimes. In the same way, God, we thank you for the impossible love that you show by giving us your son, Jesus. And God, I pray that we can really truly be moved to honor you, to revere you, and to truly be in awe of your grandeur. As we take the crackers represents your body and the juice that represents your blood, I pray that we don't take for granted what that actually meant. I pray if we don't have a relationship with you, or if we're questioning our relationship with you, or if we're faltering our relationship with you, wherever we are, God, I pray that we recognize that you have not turned your back on us and that there is nothing that has caught you by surprise. We love you and pray in your son Jesus' name.